Welcome to Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, the show that dares to bring no-nonsense insight to those who have the courage to start, grow, and scale a business. I'm your host, Susan Sly. Well, hey, what is up, Raw and Real Entrepreneurs, wherever you are in the world? I hope you're having an amazing day, and we're going to have I'm just so excited about my guest today. We would not stop talking prior to the show. So I was like, we better get into actually doing the show. And you write in, and I want to acknowledge Mandy for your most recent review where you said, you know, you love that this show gives you reassurance. So if you want reassurance that it's okay not to feel okay, it's okay to know that you gave away your power and you can get back your power and you can clean it up, then today's show is for you. And my guest is absolutely amazing. She has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Yahoo Finance, on the Today Show, Good Day New York, the New York Post, and in Shape Magazine. She's a former celebrity personal trainer, so we share that in common. An elementary school teacher, which we do not share in common, but I've had plenty of elementary school children in my, that I've given birth to. She once turned her quote unquote cute side hustle into a multi-million dollar business. And she did that in 2 years. She's going to tell us about that. And right now she is traveling across America with her husband and brand new rescue child, and who's a fur child, by the way, and coming live from Alabama. So, Jess Glazer, welcome to Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me here. I'm so excited, and just realized that we live super close to each other. So when I'm back on the West Side, West Coast, we'll have to get together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, look at Scottsdale.
So nice. The weather. Mm.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All of you listeners, you're all invited. One of my guests who does live in Scottsdale, Jeffrey, who has the YouTube channel, millions of subs, JR Garage, he hosts fan meetups in Scottsdale in this park. And just a lot of his fans are kids, and they all come for meet and greets. And he has it's just awesome. So you never know.
Yeah.
Never know.
Love it.
Might do burpees and wine with Jess and Susan. Who knows what it's going to be called. We'll have our mutual friend, Lori Harder, sponsor it with light pink. So you can have no carb alcohol beverages and burpees, but in the order of your choosing. Anyway, Jess, you are a serial entrepreneur. And another thing we have in common, before I did my science degree, I actually prepared a art portfolio and a fashion portfolio because I wanted to go to art school. I didn't even tell you that. But, going back, people look at you and who you are online and all of your success. What was the first business you ever started?
Oh gosh, did I have to be making money?
Nope.
Does it count?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I probably was seven. I think I was seven. I started selling those little hair clips that flip, the pop clips that you put underneath your ponytail. And I would paint them with glitter nail polish. And I sold them to my teammates in gymnastics. I would sell them for four for a dollar or 35 cents a piece.
So your margins were not that high.
Wasn't great. But you know what? My mom bought them for me. So I profited everything.
Well, that's awesome. One of the questions I ask every guest is about that first business. And we have a lot of entrepreneurs like yourself. It was some kind of thing they did in childhood where they thought this could be a good idea, right?
Yeah. The funny thing is I actually didn't grow up with any entrepreneurs in my life. That was not an option. That wasn't anything that anyone in my life did. We grew up very traditional, doctors, lawyers, accountants. That was sort of my family. And I don't think I knew what an entrepreneur was until I was in my late 20s.
And how did you figure out what an entrepreneur was?
I had people asking me, and this happened a couple different times, whether it was in fitness or it was in fashion, I would have people asking me to give them the service that I did or to make them the thing that I was making, which when I was in fashion was I was making purses and belts and jewelry just for myself. And people would ask me all the time, where can I buy it? Do you sell it? You should sell it. And so it was in those moments, same thing with personal training. Could you train me? And I'm like, no, I don't, that's not what I do. Right. But it was what I was doing and it was what I was making. And so these little light bulb moments started to go bing, 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 kind of in my late teens, early 20s. And there was a time where it just kept coming up. And so I finally started to take action on those things and make some sales.
And are you naturally a salesperson? Because there's this whole like Lady Gaga thing when it comes to sales, and people are like, they're just born that way. Or people say, I couldn't sell, but we all know it's essential to be able to sell as an entrepreneur. What is your history with selling?
So if you were to ask me, no, I am not natural. It did not come easily to me. I was in network marketing for a couple of years, and that's where I learned how to sell. I did hundreds and hundreds of cold calls and no one said yes. And so it's where I sort of grew my thicker skin and started to understand psychology of sales. And I started to do more research and learning about just how it all works. But if you were to ask my husband or my parents, they probably would say the opposite, that I am a little bit of a natural or just really good at connecting. I think that's one of my superpowers is networking and connecting. So I thrive in a room of strangers. And I think that and sales are very closely related to one another.
Yeah, they have to be, because when someone's trying to sell, but they're not connecting, it's so disingenuous, right? Yeah. What's the worst thing that ever happened to you on a cold call?
I don't think there was ever anything bad. I think it was just rejection, getting ghosted, getting hung up on. But in that moment, it was the worst thing.
Yeah.
Because you attach it to, we're meaning making machines. And so the meaning I made out of getting rejected or ghosted now goes deeper, deeper, deeper into layers of like childhood trauma or wounds of not feeling good enough, not feeling loved, not feeling worthy, when in reality, you're still safe. You're fine. Everybody gets rejected, right?
Yeah. It's interesting. I love what you said about it's that, you know, it's that perception and it's also that trigger. I was running ads in USA Today, and this is many, many years ago. And I had some guy leave a message on, you know, on the ad call-in number that I'd set up. And he said, there are things, because I like a PG-rated show, but he said a whole bunch of things he was going to do to me. And then he was going to, like, he was going to hunt me down. He was going to do some horrific things to me. And then he was going to kill me. And I looked at my husband and I'm like, I'm done. Like, and my husband's like, he can't even figure out how to find you, because there's no, you don't have your name associated with that ad, you know, and on and on and on. And I purchased it through an ad broker anyway. But, you know, that was how people used to bully you before. It was on a phone or to your face. Now they just do it on social media with fake accounts. That's a whole other story. Yeah. When you were getting rejected early on, how did you overcome that? Because as you said, it definitely triggers any past insecurities or places where you're out of alignment with your power. How did you overcome it though?
I don't know that I overcame it. I think it was more of a competitive, I have a very competitive nature and a very prove it type of attitude. And for a really long time, now I'm just almost 40, but for a really long time, it was having to prove it, having to show that I'm worthy, having to validate external validation, accolades, awards. That's really what I was fueled by. So simply being told no or ghosted was enough fuel for me to do it again. But also at the time, I had a full-time job. I was an elementary school teacher. I was a part-time personal trainer, bartender, and waitress. So I was very busy. I also had safety nets financially. And so I had a job, and this stuff that was practicing, or these things, these skills I was learning, were for this kind of cute side hustle, which at the time was a bonus. So I didn't put too much pressure on the outcome. And I think for me, that was huge. I think there's also just a level of ignorance is bliss. And so I just kept running into the wall. I just kept running into the wall over and over again. And it wasn't until years later that, now looking back, I realize all the different lessons and probably also the interest that I had in learning more, because from that was birthed, let me go actually figure out what's not working. Let me ask for help. Let me recognize that ego truly is your biggest overhead. And it's not a weakness to ask for help, but rather a strength. And so through those experiences of not getting what I wanted, it was just kind of pushing me towards trying it a different way.
Ego is your biggest overhead. I love that.
That's Chris's.
I love that.
That's Chris's. Yeah. He said that to me a couple of years ago and it changed my entire business.
Yeah, well, I might have to borrow that. I'm doing a talk for a real estate association on AI and the metaverse in the real estate sector. And that would be a good opener. So what's your biggest overhead? Ego. I love it. And Wayne Dyer always said, ego stands for edging God out. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's no place for ego, especially as an entrepreneur. Let me ask you this. So you grow this side hustle into a multi-million dollar business in 2 years. So what was the business and how did you do that?
Yeah. So while I was working as a teacher, the side hustle was a bunch of different things. It really actually started with online personal training. This was back in 2012. So I had been a trainer at the time for probably at least 10 years, maybe longer, 12 years. And I started doing fitness competitions. And my coach was in Massachusetts, but I was in New Jersey. So I had this idea because I was paying her to email me my workouts and my macros. And so I had this light bulb idea of, wait a minute, all of my friends from college who live in different states have been asking me since we've graduated college, how can I train them? So if I'm paying this woman, then I could do the same thing. And so I started training people online just through emails. And then it morphed into blogging, which I wasn't making any money. And for the record, my mom was the only person who read my blog, but I still did it weekly. And I went and started building 12-week workout programs and $79 eBooks. And then I started doing paid Facebook groups. And so this iteration of still not thinking it was a business, but the cute side hustle was morphing into what I saw in 2013, 14, and 15 as the trends in this online industry. It's still working as a teacher. So 2016, I'm driving to work in October, listening to a podcast. This woman is a teacher and she sells jewelry on Etsy. So my ears are perked up because I'm a teacher and I sell jewelry as well. And the man interviewing her said, if you gave it your best shot, because she wanted to go all in on entrepreneurship, if you gave it your best shot, you gave yourself 1 year and it didn't work out, what would be the worst case scenario? So she said, I don't know, I'd probably go back to teaching. I've been a teacher for a decade, probably just get another job. And his answer changed my entire life. He said, oh, how does it feel to wake up every day and live in your worst case scenario? How does it feel to wake up and live in your worst case scenario? And I pulled my car over on the highway. I was bawling, crying. I texted my husband, Mike, and I said, I can't do this anymore. About 8 weeks later, I walked into my principal's office and resigned with absolutely no plan. The plan was do whatever I have to do to make ends meet. And at that point, it was, how can I grow this cute side hustle? So to answer your question, it first started with online personal training and eBooks, and then it went into low ticket and high ticket group courses, all in the health and fitness space. We left New Jersey, moved into New York City, which he was working there and commuting anyway. And I started working as a trainer because I had been for, at that time, now about 15 years. So I walked into a gym, got myself a job, had to wear the little name tag and do the whole front desk thing and picking up weights, which again, I had to put my ego aside because for 15 years, I had already been training celebrities and now I'm back to the quote unquote bottom.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter.
Floor trainer. And for people who don't know, so, and Jess knows the story, but, I was the top personal training manager in the world for Bally Total Fitness back in the day when we had the television ads with the ripped abs and stuff. So when you start in the gym, you are starting at close to minimum wage, and you are what is called a floor trainer. So that means when new members come in the gym, you have to do their fitness assessments. Yep. And if you can sell them on personal training, then you will be able to get a percentage. But when you first start, you get a very low percentage of what the quote unquote billing rate is. So it could be as low as 30%. Back in the days, Bally's doesn't exist, so I can disclose this. Like our peak trainer, our like most seasoned trainer, they're Paul Check certified, they're every certification under the sun, they would get like 65% of their billing rate, 65 to 70%. So that was like before Bally, before all those clubs got acquired, where the most then a person could get is like 50% of their billing. So you had to be a floor trainer, which is what happened to me after I was homeless. I was like, I went to work for Bally's and I was in management, but when one of my floor trainers would call in sick, I was a floor trainer. And the day I re-met my husband, Chris, I had cut off all my hair. I had sworn off dating. I was wearing Danskin flare tights and an oversized men's Bally Total Fitness sweatshirt. And I had no makeup on. And it was 5 a.m. I was so mad because Kimberly had called in sick. I knew she wasn't sick. She was hungover. And I had no one I could call. And I I walk across the street to the club and I'm stocking towels, Jess. And I'm like,
yep.
And in he walks. And I'm like, anyway.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Don't do this at home, kids. But Chris and I moved in on our second date and we've been together now for 23 years. But I re-met him when I was being a floor trainer.
Isn't that funny? So it was very similar, not in the meeting of my husband, but I had been doing I was taking home about 100 to 125 a session when I was in New Jersey training. I go to New York and like you're saying, floor sessions, I think I was taking home like $20 and you're picking up weights. But to answer your question from earlier, this is also where I got really good at sales because I hate this term, but you know, you eat what you kill. And so when you're a floor trainer, if you don't sell the session, then you're not making money and they're not going to just give you clients. And so 18 years as a trainer, I did get pretty good at sales through that, just learning that. So I go back to floor training and I'm just hustling on the computer, building my business. And what once was this cute side hustle making, gosh, $300, $500 a month while I was a teacher, quickly scaled to multiple six figures in about 3 months because I went all in. I had nothing else. I had no safety net. And what happened was a lot of the trainers in New York started asking me, what are you doing? Now this is 2017, 2018. What are you doing? Why are you always on the computer? How are you making so much money? And so I just started sharing and teaching. I'm a teacher. So I just started teaching my friends and I was teaching them for free. And in between clients, we'd sit down behind my computer and I was teaching them how to build landing pages and email lists and how to launch. And the first friend had an $80,000 launch. So very similar to what had happened when I was in fashion, which we didn't really get into, but I basically had my purses and they were a prototype that I brought to the gym I worked at. And I'm like, let's see if we sell any. I don't have any inventory, but people kept asking me for it. We sold like $4,000 worth of orders that day. And so I say my mom was helping me. And so we went home and made those orders. So now the same thing happened. I'm helping my friends for free. They're having $80,000 launches. And so I started to recognize, wait a minute, I think I have something here. So I used a bunch of my friends as beta, not used them, but I gifted them sort of this methodology that I started to put together because in teaching, I wrote curriculum for 8 years. So I wrote a curriculum on how to help people build businesses. And that's really where our signature program started. So it was fitness and business both for a couple of years. And actually only in 2020 did I finally retire from all of the fitness things and just go business.
And that, you know, I want to acknowledge Jess because in that space, when she was building that business, was the go-to person for trainers to learn how to build that kind of business. And because I was just doing a speaking event in Miami and I was talking about fundraising for your company. And one of the people in the front row, she's a ClickFunnels 2 Comma Club member and personal trainer. And she built a $1 million plus per year business doing the whole ClickFunnels funnel thing with the paid membership that was very small, like free, paid levels, events, and so on. But you were one of the people to go first, just like, you know, 95, I was doing email fitness programs. I was a fitness coach online in 95 when the internet was just getting started. It was still on dial-up.
Wild.
Right. And thinking about that, and you do learn how to sell, because if not, you're going to be one of these floor trainers who's living with like three roommates who are like just a train wreck, and you come home and there's someone else sleeping in your bed and they're not supposed to be there. And it's just like, you know, you either say, I surrender, this is what my life is going to be like, or I'm getting out of this. But you know, someone listening to the show and they're like, okay, you know, I get it. You know, that makes so much sense. But if you could go back in time now, so, you know, as you mentioned, you're about to turn 40. If you're not seeing Jess, she doesn't look it. She looks like she's 23. What would you go back and do differently?
It's funny. I don't know that I would do anything differently because then I wouldn't be here with the lessons that I have. But I do think I could have used support earlier.
Mm.
You know, thinking back to two times I've dealt really, really dealt with burnout, adrenal fatigue, and a breast cancer scare from just overworking, overstress, not taking care of myself. I do think I could have used support earlier. And I think so many solopreneurs and entrepreneurs run into this where we think it's the chicken or the egg. And you're like, well, I have to make money first before I can outsource or hire. I'm not there yet. I'm not, I didn't hit this proverbial goal that I need to hit. Who am I to hire? Mm-hmm. And I think just even maybe an extra mentor, coach, maybe having a family member help, a barter situation, an intern, anything that I could have taken something off of my plate. But again, I wouldn't have changed it because I know for me, I don't learn the lesson until I'm like whacked upside the head. So had I not gone through the moments crying on the floor, terrified for my life, that I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you, Lori, and I are all friends. And when Lori was on the show, when we're doing the light pink launch, you know, similar question, and she had a similar answer. I would have leaned into my network earlier. Yeah. And my mentor always says, your network equals your net worth. And thinking about who is your personal board of directors or support. When Dave Asprey was on the show, and if you all haven't heard that show, go in the archives. There are lots of shows there. So Dave was talking about just the, you know, and I have so much respect for Dave because, you know, here at Radius, I was telling you before we went, like our current valuation for this company is about $120 million. I haven't built a $1 billion company yet. So I'm learning from people who have, right? And I have friends in my network who have, but there are some common themes and it all goes back to what you said. And so it's about that support. You know, do you have a business coach? Do you have a therapist? Do you have that TUA friend who you call and go, I'm having a wall kicking moment, or, you know, I'm thinking of doing something crazy, like getting a forehead tattoo, you know, and they're like, okay, wait a minute, you know, that's okay. I still love you. What's, you know, and it's that support. And I don't think that's something just for women. I think that's for everyone. Did you ever give away your power in the journey?
Yeah. A couple times, and probably more than a couple times. It's interesting looking back, there were times that I gave away my power that actually catapulted me to take action. And I can think of a specific example and I'll give that. And then there were times that I gave away my power and it sort of sucked me down into this dark hole of inaction and being paralyzed, which is really interesting. And when I look at what those things were, it for me has always been comparing. So there were moments in the gym, I was a gym teacher, so phys ed, in the actual gym where in between classes, my students would, I was elementary school, they'd get walked down to me and then they'd get walked back, you know, to their classroom. And I would quickly look at my phone and I would scroll and I would watch what all of these other people were doing on Instagram, whether it was the network marketing company I was with or some of these kind of new influencers. This was back in 2012, 2013. And I would compare not my life, but where they were in what I perceived to be their successful business and then where I was in my, you know, cute side hustle. And so that comparison at the time was the fuel to say, I totally could do this. There's nothing that he has or she has, or it's nothing that they're doing or teaching that I'm not capable of doing. I just don't have the capacity. And so for me, it was really the fuel to leave my job and to go all in. But at the same, all in the same breath, I've gotten caught in comparison specifically about a year ago, where it was just, it was taking me down. It was paralyzing me. I was going through an experience. I was going through an ego death or a shamanic death, just a shedding of an old identity. You know, Mike and I used to live in Manhattan. We were doing the whole big New York City thing and an incredible apartment with the big business, with the celebrity, you know, training and all the events and TV shows. And when we left New York, we jumped into an RV, a 40-foot motorhome for 14 months, traveled the country for 27 states for 14 months. And I feel that it was the first time that I actually could hear myself. Like in 38 years, it was the first time that I could hear myself. And I wasn't sure that I liked what I heard, but then what I was seeing online from other people that were mentors or peers or had been clients of mine, what I saw them doing, and then what I was questioning myself of what I was doing and us just bopping around the country together with no noise. It was the first time I didn't realize how loud it was in New York. And if you're listening right now, you might be laughing because like, of course it's loud in New York, Jess, but when you're in the vortex of it all, it's not loud, it's energizing. And so those 14 months in the RV, there were definitely a lot of moments where I was questioning just everything. What are we doing? And where's the business going? And who am I? And what do I believe? What do I stand for? What do I not stand for? So it's interesting how the comparison could both for me fuel me, but then also really sort of take me down.
Mm, yeah. And now that things are quieter, when you are scrolling, when you see, say, someone else who might be a peer, what's the narrative in your head now?
You know, it's so interesting. I think the worst part of the comparison wasn't even necessarily about the other people. It was about myself and the previous year or two of work. So if we've doubled the business every single year I've been in business, and it was the first year last year, which we didn't double it. We were right there. We didn't double it, but it was an intentional not doubling it because we were traveling. I intentionally shut off a stream of revenue. So we knew going into the year that unless something crazy happened, we weren't going to be doubling it. But the stories that we tell ourselves and all of a sudden what we make that mean about us, and how dare I bring my husband into the company and not double it? And how dare I not double it just because I always have? And what does that mean about me? And was the other shoe going to drop? Is it over? Like, has it been a great run? Do I just quit? Do I give up? So the interesting thing was, it wasn't even always about the other people. It was about me. But to answer your question, and you might think I'm crazy, I actually shut my account down and started a brand new Instagram page. Mm-hmm. Completely new, from zero. I had like 24,000 followers on the old page. It was 8 years old. I shut it down. I created a new one. I changed my name, so you can't even necessarily find me with ease, and had to just detach from, but all of the old podcast episodes I've been on and all the media and all the press and how people know me, it didn't matter. I shut it down and started fresh. I wanted to be detached from old stories, old beliefs, old pivots, old people, old energy, and just start again. So that's what I did in December.
It's so healing.
Yeah.
It is so healing. And when we decide, you know, to have that, whatever anyone wants to call it, you know, divorcing of an old self or the dying off of that self or the birth of a new self or a new chapter, that the biggest thing is the mixed messages, right? Because you can't move forward if you're always looking backward. Mm-hmm. And it is so cathartic to do that. And I get interviewed a lot on the career pivot. You know, there are less than 2% of tech companies have at least one woman founder. And then for visible minority founders, it's like so small. And here I am in artificial intelligence, right? So you've known me for like a very long time, or like of me. And, you know, it's so dramatically different than what I was doing, but it aligns so much with who I am now. And the same thing, anyone who has tried to keep me in their version of who they need me to be, that is convenient for them, is no longer in my life.
Yeah.
And as entrepreneurs, if we aren't growing, then our businesses aren't growing.
Yep. Yeah. My mentor now always says your business is a direct reflection of you, and it will only grow to the extent that you do. And the amount of times people have said to me, oh my gosh, you've changed. Like, it's a bad thing. I'm like, yeah, I have. I've actually been working really hard for the last 15 years or 20 years or 10 years on changing.
It's like, so thank you for noticing. Thank God I've changed, because I don't want to stay the same.
My goodness. And that old version of me was not bad. This one is not better. It's just, that's the journey. And so, funny enough, when I was kind of going through it, if you will, that's when we finally named the company, which is like our umbrella company. And we named it Digital Business Evolution, because it's constantly evolving. And I've been able to even reframe the pivots, because there was a point in my life where I thought all these pivots and the quitting this job and that job, I thought they were bad, but it's just an evolution of self, an evolution of the business. So they're not bad. It's neutral.
So as an entrepreneur, a lot of people get entrepreneurial ADD. So they dabble. Like, you had your cute side hustle, but you had like several different jobs and the quote unquote cute side hustle, right? So, but by the same token, you have been in the same vertical for a very long time by entrepreneurial standards. So how did you resist, or did you ever have it, the urge of entrepreneurial ADD to jump from one thing to the other?
I definitely have entrepreneurial ADD for sure. You know, it's interesting, the more that I learn about myself, which I think is the key, self-awareness is the key. And so whether that's Myers-Briggs and Enneagram, or if you're into astrology or just sitting with yourself and journaling, over the years, I've learned a lot about myself. And I've learned that the way that I'm wired, I'm a visionary. So I'm constantly getting downloads and ideas, and I like to bring them, maybe birth them, maybe, but I could care less about finishing them. I really don't care. And I don't care about bringing it to market. And so I'm always up in the sky, like pulling down all of these ideas and downloads and constantly wanting to change, pivot. Before we started recording, I said, you know, Mike and I have never lived anywhere longer than 2 years. Ever, because we just get bored easily. He's very much the same as I am. So in my daily routine, I like to be grounded and I like my routine, but in my life, in my job, in my ideas and where I live, I'm constantly changing it. Cause when I get bored, I'm done. I like to master something and then I move on. And so it's been really interesting in entrepreneurship. I think for me, surrounding myself with an incredible team, we have the most amazing COO, our integrator of operations. She kind of brings me back down to earth all the time and she'll keep me a bit more grounded because I am always up in the clouds wanting to do the next thing. The amount of ideas, we joke all the time, you know, I use Canva. If you're listening, mm-hmm. Canva is like a really great kind of graphic design program.
It's a, let's just have a moment. There might be an addiction to Canva that I have. So I just
100%.
Like, even for Radius, this is so confessionary, but we have the money. We're an at revenue company to hire an agency or whatever. I still do our slide decks. I do them. And I put in my calendar, I'll have like focus time and it'll be like 3 hours. And one of our co-founders, our CTO, is like, Susan, you're so good at putting focus time in. I'm like, yeah, Bobby, because you know what I'm doing? I'm on Canva. And I'm like, my favorite thing, if we're not doing anything as a family, Friday night, glass of red wine, and I'm on Canva.
Literally the same, except white for me. Same. And we joke all the time, my integrator and I, we say, we should just sell, you can steal this idea, go for it. But we're like, we should just sell a membership. It's like $10,000. And you get lifetime access to my Canva. The amount of programs that I have created and never launched, the amount of workbooks that are in there, especially being a teacher, like my Canva, you can build a multiple seven-figure business just by sifting through the content in my Canva that's never actually made it to social media because I just like to create it. I don't really care about the rest of it. So, you know, to answer your question, I think it's just having people around that keep me grounded and keep me on track and being okay with that as well. Because initially there's a lot of resistance and control. You know, I'm the boss, I'm the visionary, I'm the founder. What do you mean? Right. And now it's okay. Her name's Lauren. All right, Lauren, you're right. You know, we're not going to get through the first project if now I'm already on to the second. So bring me back to earth and just recognizing that. And the interesting thing was too, part of my ego death and part of my comparison journey last year was just that. So I'm teaching a lot of the same stuff that I've been teaching for years. And I started to compare myself to some of my peers who, through our own evolution, they started teaching new things, right? I'm not reading the same books now that I was 6 years ago, mm-hmm. but my clientele are reading the books that I read 6 years ago now. And so I started to get lost in the shuffle, if I'm being honest. And I started to feel that I wasn't growing or who was I or how embarrassing that Jess is still teaching about niche and ideal client. Like she's been teaching that for 5 years. Yeah. And what I had to recognize was I had a choice. There was a fork in the road and the choice was either continue to serve that person who I serve very well and we get incredible results for. And I love working with the newer entrepreneur. Or if I am going to start teaching and sharing other content, recognize that I'm also going to have to pivot my messaging, maybe build a new audience. And I won't really be teaching. I still can, but I won't be teaching that information to the capacity at which I was. And so through some of the confusion, we birthed a couple different programs and products and my team allowed me the space and freedom to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And about 3 months after playing around with some new stuff, I was like, wait a minute, guys, you know what I'm really good at? And they're all laughing, you know, they're like, we know this. And I'm like, I really love that newbie stuff. And they're like, yes, welcome back. You know, so I kind of had to go off on my own journey to recognize I'm not any less than. And now what we've done is instead of just having me teach or have a course or coaching program, we've built a machine that mm-hmm. really we can put people through this machine and the results they get just keep getting better and better. And our program keeps getting better and better. And I would rather be known to help with this one particular thing than doing a million different things. And on my own time, I can be learning about higher level stuff.
Well, you know, it's not surprising since you were an elementary school teacher. Kindergartners need the same learning every single year. It's a new mm-hmm. class of kindergartners. And very similarly too, like in my for my tech incubator, I chose to focus on women who didn't come from tech backgrounds who want to start a tech business, because that is my passion about teaching those fundamentals, especially since I've walked them. And it's so like this whole conversation. So I have like to totally digress. I was like, forget book club. We should have wine and Canva club. So we could have a membership. And if you all are like as, you know, creative as we both are, then you can, you know, it's once a month you come out and we just build stuff on Canva, whether it goes anywhere or not.
That's amazing. I'm into it. And you don't even have to be creative. That's the best part. There's no right way to do it.
When you come back to Scottsdale, it is so on.
Oh,
so,
we're doing like, Canva party.
Yeah, we are.
Meet us in the park. Screw the burpees and the wine. We're going to do Canva and wine instead.
Yeah, Canva and wine. At my new house if it ever gets finished, the renovation.
Canva and cabs.
I love it. I'm already in my mind. Yeah, I'm already thinking like, who are we inviting to this party? So going back to this whole realization, and especially as an athlete, right? So this athletic mindset, it almost feels like to say, okay, no, this is my zone of genius. And this is the group I want to focus on, even though I've been focusing on them for a long time. It almost feels like a downgrade maneuver when in fact it's the opposite. It's mm-hmm. a place of empowerment, because suddenly you have this space and grace to go, yeah, this is my zone. And it feels really, really good. And as you were sharing, you know, and as you know, so, you know, for years, I spoke on big stages, 20,000 people, you know, Tony Robbins speaking, Jack Canfield speaking. So when I pivoted back and had that moment of, after I almost died in 2016 and going, if I had have died, what in my career have I not yet done that I want to do? And so I made a list, and there were only a few things on this list, mm-hmm. and I'm doing them now. And so when I started in tech, it's like I had to earn the right to be here. And so now, 3 years later, I'm speaking on these stages, but I'm on panels. Now I'm on panels with people like McDonald's, NVIDIA, Deloitte and Touche. Like it's a whole different thing. And my friend who is, there are hardly any women in AI, Jess, like there's like five of us maybe, but we'll all be at the Canva party because we're all like, anyway, that she said, you know, the first year you have to do the panel, but they watch you. They go in and they watch all the panels. And then the next year, your panel goes to the main stage. And then the next year, they take the individuals from the panel and they're the keynoters. And it was, I felt like it was a downgrade maneuver in so many ways, from a money perspective, from a career perspective. But now I just feel so in my power. Yeah. And so I get it. I so get it. And I hope everyone listening, you know, it's like Jess and I are just having a girlfriend chat, which is, I hope you are all loving this. And Jess and I ask for what we want. So we would love 5-star reviews. Thank you. And share and tag and all of that good stuff on social. But it's not a downgrade maneuver to be in your zone of genius and to serve at that level.
I love what you just brought up though, because I'm getting this visual, and you're the one who mentioned sports, but it's, you know, you look at these pro athletes, and I just think of, my husband loves football, Patriots, right? So we think of football or baseball, and it's like that athlete at that pro level taking an hour at practice to just do one skill over and over and over. And for me, I was a gymnast. So getting up on the balance beam and doing your, you know, your tumbling series over and over and over and over, and you fall and you scrape yourself and you stick some, and it's great. And you do it until the point where you're exhausted, but it doesn't make you less than. You're not going backwards when you're honing in that skill. And so it's kind of the pull back to sling forward. And it, from an outside perspective, it's incredible to see you going on the panel and then moving forward. But what it is it's delayed gratification. And I think that's what people forget about. And I think all of us humans, we are just living in such a world of instant gratification where, and it does feel and look like a lot of these businesses are successful overnight. It was easy for her. He has a lot of followers. They have a big email list, but it's delayed gratification. And so just do the live, just put up the post, just speak on the panel. And, you know, my favorite quote, you said part of it before, which is funny, is a Steve Jobs quote. And you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backward. And you have to trust that they'll appear. And I'm a visual person. So for me, those dots are stepping stones in a river, and we're just working our way across the river. And so, yeah, you're standing on a stone right now that represents the panel, and the stone in front of you is, you know, the next version. And then the next version is the keynote, but you wouldn't have gotten to those rocks if you weren't willing to get on the ones before it.
Mm, beautiful. Yeah. And I'd read you were a gymnast. And since you brought up the Patriots, which I love, look at Tom Brady. I mean, he retires for like a second and then comes back. And some people are like, well, why would you do that? Because he still has his moonshot. So that leads me to my last question. What is your moonshot?
Oh, I love that we're having this conversation, because I have this, I call them crazy, stupid ideas. And I have, amongst all of the downloads, I have a crazy, stupid idea to, yes, build a company to sell, but it's actually in the tech space, and I know nothing about it, and I don't know how to do it. And I'm still going to just figure, I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out. But that's definitely in the business arena. Like, still want to do all the coaching. I love that, and really build this company out so that we can just help more people. We're all about impact. We've built a school over in Africa, and I can't wait to get there to visit it because it opened during pandemic. But moonshot would definitely be building a company to sell, specifically in the tech space, and then just being able to take care of the people that we love. You know, we always say, don't judge your carrot, the thing that's sort of dangling in front of you. And so many times our carrot is just to make money, or to retire a spouse, or to be able to take a vacation, go to dinner and not look at the menu price, not stress out. And then we get into this like weird cycle of judging ourselves. And then we don't take action because, oh gosh, I'm not a good person if that's the thing that I want. And you know, from training, I mean, you've trained thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. Everybody comes in to change their physical body. I don't think I ever had someone come in for another reason that wasn't vanity metric. But it's over time that they come back because now they feel good and they're addicted to it, and the endorphins, and they want to do a Spartan race, and they want to learn a pull up, and they want to get faster. But it starts, the carrot starts usually with some sort of a more vanity type metric. And so for me, there are a lot of things I'm super unapologetic about wanting to create a lot of wealth. And we want to, so that we can do good things and can take care of the people that we love, and just provide opportunities for other people, provide jobs for other people, provide a work environment that might not exist. And that's something we're working on right now with our team and team culture, and creating whatever it is that we want to create, and having that freedom is really part of it.
Well, the good news is, you know, someone who knows how to create a tech company. Yes. And with FemBoss, with the incubator I created. So when women come through, once their pitch is accepted, we actually build their MVP tech for them. We come alongside them. We help them raise the money. And then the moonshot with that is to launch, grow, and scale and sell 1,000 female-led tech companies in the next 10 years. So we have applicants. And if you're listening and you want to apply, it's fembossincubator.com. We have applicants coming through right now. One woman is in her 60s. She's a nurse, and her tech company is all about helping care from home with the elderly who are isolated. So she's going through the process right now. And I think she's on the second stage. So yes, I do know. Amazing. I can help you do that. We can chat over Canva and wine.
Perfect.
The title of this episode is going to be Canva and Wine. People are like, what is that episode about? See?
Yeah. I created the logo for this fake company on Canva already. Like, I have the logo created, but that's the only action step, because I was dreaming about it. I was thinking about it. So I did get that far.
Excellent. I love it. Well, hey, Jess, thank you so much for being here. And go to jessglazer.com. I totally did that. And on Instagram, Jess.glazer.
Oh, I changed it.
Oh, you changed it.
Yeah. So I am Jessica DeRose, which is my married name.
Mm-hmm. I am Jessica DeRose. So don't go to the one I told you, because that is wrong on the bio. Don't do it.
Sorry.
Well, Jess, thank you so much for being here. I can't wait to welcome you back to Scottsdale, your new hometown, for at least 2 years. And everyone, please tag us on social. Please give us a review. I do read all of your reviews, so I would love a review. And just so everyone knows, most podcasters, 90% of podcasters haven't put out a new show in the last 90 days. So it's like the fact you're here, the fact you're listening, the fact you're fans, I love you and I appreciate you. Thanks for being here. And Jess, thanks for being here. This has been like such a great show.
Susan, thank you so much. I love it. Can't wait to come back.
Well, thank you. All right, Raw and Real Entrepreneurs. This has been another episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. And don't forget to go back and listen to some of the past episodes. Go check out Lori's show, check out Dave Asprey's show. And by all means, if you have a business, you want to be a guest, go to SusanSly.com. You can apply. We are taking bookings, I think, 6 months out, but I would love to have you. So with that, God bless. Go rock your day. And I will see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Susan. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode. If this episode has helped you in any way, please go ahead and give a great review on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you listen to this podcast. If this show has really given you some amazing insight, please go ahead and tag me on social at Susan_Sly on Twitter, at Susan Sly on Instagram, and at Susan Sly Live on Facebook. With that, check out more great episodes of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, the show where entrepreneurs create their own freedom. With that, God bless, go rock your day, and I will see you in the next episode.